Today's last case is United States versus Kelly. Appellant ready?
Yes, sir.
Government?
Yes, sir.
Appellant may argue.
Good afternoon, Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court. I am still Zachary Spillman. Captain Oluwaseye Awoniyi and I represent the appellant, Sergeant Kelly. Chief Judge Stuckey, may I reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please? Thank you. May it please the court. Mandatory minimum sentences are lawful sentences, but they are not necessarily appropriate sentences. When Congress amended Article 56, effective in 2014, to require that a court-martial adjudge a punitive discharge as a mandatory minimum in certain cases, it did not divest the courts of criminal appeals of their wholly independent power and duty to determine the appropriateness of the sentence in every case. The new Article 50B establishes a mandatory minimum sentence that must be adjudged. It also references the new limits that were enacted at the same time on a convening authority's power under Article 60. But the new Article 50B does not, nor can it rationally be read to, affect the independent powers granted by Congress under Articles 66, 71, and 74. Nor does the Article 56B language require that a mandatory minimum punitive discharge actually be executed.
Presumably, when they amended the UCMJ to remove this, to provide for a mandatory minimum sentence, is it your position that they were aware of the language in Article 66?
Absolutely, Judge Ryan.
Meaning, since it was a rather holistic review of the entire UCMJ, right, aimed at putting certain limitations on the system when it came to sexual offenses, one would expect that they were aware of the CCA's awesome plenary power under Article 66?
Absolutely, and we think that the rules presume that Congress, you know, the normal rules of statutory construction presume that Congress knows the law when it changes it. But they also knew...
To use a phrase that the Chief Judge uses, but how does that cut? If Congress knew about it, then why didn't Congress put in some provision that said, exclusive of the authority of the CCAs to conduct their Article 66 responsibility?
Because they did the other thing, Judge Olson. It cuts our way. What Congress did is they identified the provisions where a convening authority can change an adjudged sentence. And they didn't talk about anybody else because their focus was on the convening authority and a convening authority's action being restricted. It wasn't just, or it isn't just the reference to Article 60 in Article 56. It's also the fact that in Article 71D, a convening authority has the power to suspend or remit a punitive discharge, and Congress restricted 71D as well. But they didn't restrict 71A, they didn't restrict 71B, they didn't restrict 74. They didn't change the fact that 74 can be delegated all the way down. They didn't restrict 66. And they didn't restrict Article 69, which is a really interesting one. Because under Article 69, if a case does not go to a court of criminal appeals, it goes to the JAG for review. Now, any punitive discharge is going to invoke 66. But the JAG under 69 has a sentence reassessment power. The word reassessment's in there, 69A and 69B. They didn't touch that either. And they didn't touch it for good reason. Never mind the fact that there's no indication that Congress intended to strip away all of these additional powers.
Well, it wouldn't have made any sense to tinker with 69, which is sub-jurisdictional, when the whole point of the amendment was to make everybody get a DD.
It was, well, so Chief Judge Stuckey, it was to force the court-martial to adjudge the DD.
That's what, you know, however you want to describe it.
But we think that the description is very important because nowhere do they actually require the discharge be executed. And there are all sorts of ways that a convening authority can prevent the discharge from being executed. For instance...
You believe that Congress, in saying a DD ought to be imposed here, they were purposely leaving out even more instances than what they particularly articulated, where the convening authority had leeway to, in fact, not impose a DD?
What the convening authority does not, so the Article 56B requires a court-martial to a judge. Article 60 restricts a convening authority's power to disapprove. A convening authority has, in the Naval Service and in the Air Force, the Article 74 clemency power delegated all the way down to them. So a convening authority in those services has to approve the punitive discharge, but then may immediately, in the next breath, on the next piece of paper, suspend and remit the punitive discharge so it's never executed. But there's even a more creative way to shortcut it, and that's that a convening authority can administratively discharge or allowed to be administratively discharged the accused between the time the sentence is adjudged and the convening authority acts. An intervening administrative discharge remits all unexecuted portions of the sentence. If the accused is discharged the day after the court-martial, there is no punitive discharge. Right? He's administratively discharged. Now, convening authorities are creative. I've been talking to my new friends in the Army, and I asked them if the Army has the same rule that the Marine Corps has, which is that anything that's not prohibited is allowed. And they tell me not really, but I'm used to that rule, and convening authorities are creative. And Congress, when they drafted Article 56B, knew this, and so they put in a provision that said, hey, convening authority, there is no way that you can get around our requirement that the discharge be adjudged, and you can't change it. And they did so because they were angry at what they perceived as abuses by a certain convening authority of that power. And so that's what they restricted. That's what the words, except as provided for in Article 60, address, those words in Article 56, that's what they address, is they are a reference back to the convening authority's ability. Now, there's another reason.
So does that perhaps prove too much? You really think that Congress, in passing legislation that said such punishment must include at a minimum dismissal or dishonorable discharge, was knowingly saying, but there are all these ways for people to get around this? Or should we look at this language and say, did they, by its plain language, did Congress manage to achieve what it wanted? And look at its intent and say what they wanted and what the plain language could be construed as authorizing is if you're convicted of these certain offenses, you get a dishonorable discharge.
Judge Olson, I have three answers for you. The first is that I think that once we're talking about congressional intent and trying to figure out what they wanted, we have departed from the plain language of the statute. And we don't think that we need to depart from the plain language. We think that the plain language is clear and controls except for where it leads to absurd results. The plain language, which is my second answer, is that a court-martial must adjudge, and there's a reference to Article 60. There's nothing in there that talks about Article 66 or 71 or 74 or the president's pardon power or administrative discharge or all these other possibilities. Congress spoke deliberately to what it wanted. A court-martial to a judge, and a convening authority to not disturb.
And that makes a lot of sense, except for when Congress then says, but here's a couple of instances where that doesn't happen. So because if it was simply this language, your argument, I believe, would have greater force. But since Congress then said, here's a couple of exceptions, why shouldn't we say only those exceptions?
Well, they said, Judge Olson, here's a couple of exceptions for the convening authority, for this one particular actor. There already existed many exceptions for other actors. And the third answer that I had to your original question really goes to why the reading advanced by the Army Court has to be wrong. A Court of Criminal Appeals has a single reassessment power, the same power that is used to reduce an inappropriately severe sentence, as in this case, when the findings are affirmed, is also used to reassess the sentence when a finding is disapproved. If the amendment to Article 56 eliminated the power of a court of criminal appeals to reduce a mandatory minimum discharge as inappropriate, notwithstanding the findings, then it also eliminated the power of a court of criminal appeals to reassess a mandatory minimum when a finding is disapproved.
Why?
Because it's only one power.
Why is it only one power? Where does it say that?
In Jackson. That the source of this power all comes from the ability of the Court of Criminal Appeals to determine which portion of the sentence should be approved in light of the findings. It all flows from that little bit of statutory language. And so if we read this to say that a punitive discharge, a mandatory minimum punitive discharge, cannot be reassessed, then it cannot be reassessed in any context. And in fact, Chief Judge Stuckey, I'd go even a little further on that one. The statute, Article 56B, requires only a finding of guilty. It does not require an approved finding of guilty, or an affirmed finding of guilty, or a legally correct finding of guilty, just a finding. So if Article 56 limits Article 66, then we run right into expressio unis exclusio alteris, right? All Congress required for a mandatory minimum punitive discharge is jurisdiction, right, a person subject to the code, subject to this chapter, and a finding of guilty, not actually an approved finding. So if we read it that specifically and say, you know, we're gonna do this, then even if the predicate offense is set aside, the discharge may not be. Counsel, that's an absurd reading.
Can I ask about the Jefferson case? I mean, the Jefferson seems to be right on point. Jefferson says that the predecessor to the CCAs did not have to approve a mandatory life imprisonment sentence. But that was in the context of the convening authority also having the ability not to approve it. And I'm trying to understand, in a situation where the convening authority is also bound by a mandatory minimum and the CCAs cannot engage in clemency, what is it for them? How do they exercise their discretion? I mean, if we say, okay, they're not limited, but they can't engage in clemency, what is there left for them to do? What would be an example?
So, Judge Maggs, my answer to that is to look at the legal standard by which a court of criminal appeals judges the appropriateness of the sentence. And we get the legal standard from the Army Government Appellate Division's brief to the Court of Criminal Appeals. It's reproduced in the Joint Appendix at page 47. Generally, sentence appropriateness should be judged by individualized consideration of the particular accused on the basis of the nature and seriousness of the offense and the character of the offender. That's how they do it. And, you know, that was not a standard created by the Government Appellate Division. They were actually quoting this court, this court's predecessor in United States versus Snelling from 1982. So there is a standard. There has always been a standard. Presumably the judges of the courts of criminal appeals are selected because of their judicial temperament and their ability to apply that standard. That's how they do it. The statute, when Congress said a court-martial must adjudge one of these punishments, they did not change the totally separate statutory provision that says that a court of criminal appeals must still determine whether or not it's appropriate.
But this does go further than the mandatory minimum at issue in Jefferson.
It
goes further because it limits the convening authority, where the convening authority was not so limited in Jefferson.
So it goes further, Your Honor, because it's a different statute, right? And we're under different circumstances. The analogy that we think holds up is that the Court of Criminal Appeals has and always has had the ability to judge the appropriateness of a mandatory minimum in any individual case. That fits with all of the individualized sentencing schemes that we see within the Uniform Code. Congress knew that. Congress didn't change that. If they wanted to change it, they certainly could have. It would have been very easy for them to say, and this must be approved, or an accused who is convicted of one of these offenses and the conviction is affirmed shall be discharged, or something like that. They said none of that. They said a court-martial must adjudge, and a convening authority has very limited power to touch. I'd offer just one other quick hypothetical, which is that perhaps a convening authority could refer a case potentially implicating a mandatory minimum punitive discharge to a general court-martial with instructions that no punitive discharge is authorized. Right now, I couldn't find any cases that say a convening authority can do that, but convening authorities can refer with instructions, and those instructions apply to the court-martial. And so perhaps Congress was thinking, you know, we don't want any funny business here. Convening authority, you can only affect this based on the narrow exception we've carved out in Article 60. Everyone else, business as usual. We think that is the most logical, common sense, and really the only workable reading of the statute.
So let's look at this from the Article 66 aspect of this. It seems as if the reason for that authority for the CCAs is to ensure that the punishments are not unduly harsh and that there's uniformity. So in terms of being unduly harsh, a dismissal or a DD, could be argued that Congress has decided that that's appropriate for these certain offenders. And so exercising that authority on the part of the CCA to go with BCD or something less is not really addressing that issue of unduly harsh. In terms of uniformity, to read it so that the CCA can, in certain instances, not approve a DD, wouldn't that decrease the uniformity in the armed services?
Chief Judge Stuckey, I see that my time has expired. My
answer.
Judge Olson, on the unduly harsh issue, Congress did paint with a broad brush, but the power of a court of criminal appeals to address the appropriateness of the sentence is specific to the accused and his case. There is a very narrow exception for when you consider closely related cases, but otherwise it is this accused under these circumstances in this case. And so that's where you determine whether or not something is unduly harsh. As for uniformity, that is a tougher nut to crack in this context, except that we would respectfully suggest that not all sexual assaults are created equal. And with that, I reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, good afternoon, and may it please the court. I am Captain Joshua Bannister, and along with my co-counsel, Captain Austin Fenwick, represent the government. The legislated mandatory minimum punitive discharge does apply to appellate service courts because when an appellate court is exercising its plenary, awesome, de novo review, it is still nonetheless reviewing the discretionary exercise of the sentencing powers exercised by a court-martial pursuant to Article 56 and the approval power exercised pursuant to Article 60 by the convening authority. And this is evident for three reasons. First is the plain language of Article 66 Charlie itself. Second is the precedent of this court. And third is executive authority interpreting the relevant statutes. Turning first to the plain language of the article, when an appellate court begins its review of a sentence per the specified language, it begins with what the convening authority approved. And it's important to note that an appellate court's power is actually to affirm a case, which sets it apart from the approval power. And this is important because the second to last line of the article itself says the court should affirm a sentence that is correct in law and fact, and having looked at the entire record, one that the court thinks ought to be approved. So it's actually using a specific reference back to the convening authority. And this is important because Article 66, we talk a lot about appropriateness review, but the word appropriate is never actually used expressed in the language of the article. It is something we have read in by operation of the word.
But it does use the thing that it determines on the basis of the entire record should be approved, should be.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. That was exactly my point. We've derived it from the use of the word should be approved.
But so the should be isn't tied to whether the convening authority did, right? It's a separate determination of should be. I mean, the convening authority prior to this article, right, could determine whether or not he or she would approve that, whether they thought it should be approved, and they had unfettered discretion to approve or disapprove a finding of guilty, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And to approve or disapprove the sentence for a good reason, a bad reason, or no reason at all.
Yes, Your Honor.
And then the statute changed that.
Yes, Your Honor, it drastically.
But it did not change Article 66C, did it?
It did not, Your Honor. However, it's important.
That's kind of a long-standing thread of case law throughout, like, our historic review of the CCAs, isn't it?
That the specific language of Article 66, it is, Your Honor, but to the extent that there is this precedent with respect that the appellate courts may also affirm something less than the mandatory minimum, that was originally tied.
I'm not even talking about the mandatory minimum. I'm talking about what they believe should be approved.
Yes, Your Honor.
That particular power on the part of the CCA with respect to a finding or a sentence has been basically inherent in their authority based on that statutory language, hasn't it?
It's inherent, Your Honor, but it's best to contextualize it as essentially the appellate court is allowed to step into the shoes of the convening authority and essentially second-guess the convening authority's decision, make their own independent determination of what should
be
approved.
Well, and the members, and if we accept your position, what's left of Chin?
With respect to...
Well, with respect to this... power out there that's, you know, beyond waiver and everything else to determine whether it's correct in law and fact.
Quite a bit, actually, Your Honor, because what was important in Jefferson was essentially there's two parts, again, to how the appellate court conducts its review. It's not just reviewing what the convening authority could have done. It is also, and actually begins its analysis with what the court-martial can do. And
exactly.
So it's important to recognize that the court-martial had wide discretion under the old and even still does under the new 56 to direct the punishment. All Congress did was in a limited universe of cases slightly narrow the discretion of the court-martial to adjudge whatever punishment it saw fit within the limits of what the president prescribed. So the reason the Jefferson court reached the conclusion it did essentially that because the convening authority could exercise its independent his independent judgment and approve less than the mandatory minimum, therefore the appellate court could, was that was
the counsel, that wasn't the, that, you know, in Jefferson, the court mentioned that as a factor, but it didn't seem like that was the guiding principle. I mean, I think that was like the second of three reasons that they cited. I think the first one was a limitation on the court-martial is not a limitation on the Board of Review.
Your Honor, actually, they contextualized the case as one of two options. One, they looked at it as either the language of Article 118's mandatory minimum was either an absolute bar on everything, or it was simply a limitation on the court-martial. And obviously, they did go with that second part. But what essentially informed that ultimate decision that this was only a limitation on the court-martial was then looking specifically to paragraph 88 Charlie of the 1951 manual, where the convening authority was expressly authorized to approve less than that mandatory minimum, and their language was, we believe this is the correct construction.
But that language sort of just confirmed their first point, which was the limitation in Article 118 was a limitation on the court-martial, when they noted it's not a limitation on the convening authority. Are you asking us to overrule Jefferson?
Not at all, Your Honor. The appellee is actually asking that the court follows the same logic in Jefferson, but because Congress has now subsequently changed the law upon which the Jefferson court relied upon, it would merit a different outcome.
But you're essentially asking us to revise Article 66, aren't you?
Not at all, Your Honor.
How so? If under your view, right, the CCA may no longer determine whether the sentence should be approved, that we have to excise that language right out of the statute with respect to these offenses?
No, Your Honor. With respect to the limited scope of cases where penetrative sexual offenses, which
the rule is the rule, right? So it has to apply in the same way to the same cases, to all the cases, Article 66C, unless we read language into it or read language out of it. And I'm wondering where you think we get the authority to do that.
It doesn't require changing the language at all, Your Honor, because the language has always been, the review power has always been a review of the exercise of other powers. So to use language of this court in NERAD, essentially the appellate court substitutes its judgment, steps into the shoes of the court-martial or the convening authority. But in doing so, it's going to step into the shoes based on the discretion either the court-martial or the convening authority themselves had. It doesn't step into the shoes with greater power. So if there is a limitation on the discretion of what the court-martial could adjudge, and then there's also at the same time a limitation on the convening authority, from an appropriateness, just an appropriateness standpoint, not assuming any issues with the law or any factual issues, so essentially just the final question of, does the appellate court agree whether or not the sentence is appropriate?
I'm pretty sure that isn't the language in NERAD, right? Because, I mean, in NERAD, what the CCA did is something that it could not do, is something that the convening authority could have done.
Correct, Your Honor.
So what you're saying is it doesn't seem to make a lot of logical sense to me at all.
Well, and you've never answered my question with what happens to Chin.
Nothing changes with respect to Chin, Your Honor, with the exception of within the limited...
The exception of the guts is torn out of it.
Not at all, Your Honor.
It seems to me, following up on Judge Ryan, Congress put 66 in there in 1950 because it really wanted a solid, powerful guard against the abuse of military authority, against unlawful influence in sentencing, and against the old man telling the court members what he wanted. Now, maybe we don't need that anymore because we've matured as a system, but one would think that something as elemental to this system as 66 and those powers would not be repealed sub silentio by Congress, that they'd have said something about it and said, we know what we're doing when we're doing this. And all I hear is silence.
I mean, they could have easily done that, right? I mean, they could have taken the authority away completely. They could have referenced the CCAs in the revision to the other things, right? But they didn't do anything at all. And as Judge Stuckey mentioned, I mean, this is not a minor piece in the military justice system, right? This is something unique and special about the military justice system, which is that the CCA can even ignore what the members of the military judge did, right? They have to recognize that they saw and heard the evidence, but they can make their own determination and say, we've decided he's not guilty, right? And disapprove the finding, disapprove the sentence. I mean, under your theory, they could disapprove the finding of guilty to these sex offenses, but not disapprove the sentence. And that doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense.
Your Honor, just to be clear, the only piece that they would not be able to set aside would be just the punitive discharge. The remainder of the sentence completely still falls within their purview because the court-martial had the discretion, every other part of that sentence, the court-martial still had the discretion of what they were going to
sentence. Well, but we're dealing ultimately with an issue of statutory construction here. And the effect of the amendment, the effect, if any, of the amendments to Article 60 on all this. And I fall back on my former question, which is, do you really think that Congress would have made that kind of an 800-pound gorilla change to the code and said nothing about it and done it on the sly?
Your Honor, the intent of the changes to the code was to ensure that those with a lawful, legally and factually sufficient conviction for these covered offenses be discharged from the military. That was Congress's intent.
Well, not just be discharged, but be discharged with a dismissal with a certain character of discharge, a dismissal or a dishonorable discharge.
Yes, Your Honor. And in doing that, they altered the sentencing powers they perceived necessary to effectuate that. We do presume that Congress understood the law at the time that they make these changes, and at the time, the body of law that has built up around Article 66 in terms of what is the operation of the appellate court's powers operates that it is reviewing what the convening authority could do, and Congress drastically narrowed what the convening authority could do. And in addition, what the court-martial
Article 66 doesn't have any relation to what the convening authority can do, right? I mean, where does it talk about that?
Article 66, Your Honor? The first.
I mean, they are approving or disapproving, right? They have to act on what the convening authority did.
Well, their entire analysis, Your Honor, by the first sentence of the statute begins, it says it starts with what the convening authority approved, and then it does statutorily because we
and
give...
And it used to be the case that the convening authority could do whatever the convening authority wanted, right? And they could disapprove any sentence if they wanted to for any reason or no reason at all, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. It's now been drastically narrowed, meaning
but
there's...
But they didn't do anything. They didn't say anything at all about the CCA.
They did...
And you are implying it through some bootstrapping analysis of your own making, but it's not a making of this court's. And it's not in the statute.
It is, Your Honor, in the respect that the power that Congress gave, statutorily and expressly gave to the appellate court, was to review a case and then affirm. That was its power. The fact that Congress used the word approved on the should be approved means that the court is reviewing the exercise of another power, namely that
and
of the convening
deciding
authority.
On their own whether it should be approved.
Exactly, Your Honor.
And so if the CCA gets what the convening authority has done, and they determine based on the individual facts and circumstances of a particular record that in their exercise of discretion they deem it should not be approved, then they can not approve it based on the language of the statute.
The problem, Your Honor, is that
you don't like it, I understand, but...
Well, the problem, though, Your Honor, is in under that interpretation, it is conceiving of the appellate court as essentially having a much larger power than the jurisprudence has ever done. Certainly, it's been characterized as plenary, but it has always still been connected with what the other abilities of these other powers. So, in a sense, in that particular example, essentially, the appellate court would be saying, this is the sentence that should be approved, but should be refers to some legal standard. The convening authority legally didn't have the ability to approve that sentence. So then for the appellate...
To disapprove
that sentence. I apologize, Your Honor. So for then the appellate court, which doesn't have a clemency power to come back and essentially say, even though this is completely legal, Congress has mandated this, we still believe it shouldn't have been approved. In effect, what the appellate court is doing is acting on clemency.
Well, counsel, isn't the way you phrased that exactly the problem? You just said should have been approved, but 66C doesn't say should have been approved. It says should be approved, suggesting that the question is whether the CCA should approve it as opposed to whether the convening authority should have approved it.
No, Your Honor. I see Your Honor's point. However, because I think that's an issue of tensing, because it is talking about the operation of how the CCA conducts its review, so it's used in the present tense. But because it's using the same power, the approval power, which belongs specifically to the convening authority, and because the first sentence says the appellate court begins with what the convening authority has already done, necessarily it would fall back then to a review of what was in the past. And therefore, the appellate court would be saying this is what should have been approved in that respect.
And you could make this argument, right? You could make the argument that in every case it should be approved because Congress said so, because Congress said that that's a mandatory minimum sentence. You could make that argument, but that's really the only argument you can make. So why don't you do your best to make that argument?
Well, yes, Your Honor, and that is part of the government's argument, is essentially Congress, by acting the way it did, stepped in and removed any sort of appropriateness and said, we believe under our legislative power that this is the appropriate sentence. So in that sense, there's nothing left for the appellate court to review from an appropriateness standard. Then that still leaves open all of its other review
powers. Well, then explain how you get past Jefferson without us overruling Jefferson.
Because, Your Honor, Jefferson relied at the time on a different convening authority power that Congress then changed.
I've already said I don't agree with your argument about their power is bounded by the convening authority's power. I'm saying you have to make a different argument, right, which is based on essentially this. Congress said that in all instances the only sentence that is appropriate for these sorts of offenses is a dishonorable discharge, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And therefore, the CCA must approve it. Simply because it should be approved, right? In every instance, it should be approved. Now I'm asking, how do we square that with Jefferson, where we said they don't have to approve it just because it's a mandatory minimum sentence, because based on the precise same statutory language in 66C, they don't have to.
I understand, Your Honor, and I understand Your Honor does not like the other argument that I was putting forward. And I think in that
sense... It doesn't
sense,
matter whether I like it or not. I'm just asking you, there's one argument, and then there's another argument, and so explain how you prevail on the second argument without asking us to overrule these cases.
Your Honor, it may not be possible to, because of the underlying logic that was used in Jefferson, to essentially leave Jefferson's holding intact and keeping its same logic. It seems that because of the way Congress acted within the body of law, either the court can keep the logic of Jefferson resulting in a different outcome, or it can keep the holding of Jefferson, but may have to step away somewhat from the logic, the underlying logic. Pending any further questions from the court?
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. My friend said that the intent of Congress was that those convicted of the predicate offenses be discharged. With respect, it's not. Congress could have said that. They could have said it quite easily. They didn't. The reason I spent so much time in my initial presentation talking about all of the ways that a mandatory minimum punitive discharge need not actually be executed is because once we accept that it need not actually be executed, their whole argument falls apart. Judge Ryan, your comment that, or your question to the effect that a mandatory minimum discharge should be approved because Congress says it's mandatory, respectfully, we agree that that's a consideration, but that's a consideration once we accept that a court of criminal appeals has to do the consideration. So they can consider the policy, they can consider the environment, they can consider that Congress has expressed a preference for this, but they still must review the appropriateness of the sentence, so they still have the power. This court should not reverse Jefferson because Jefferson was right when it was decided, and the statute that Jefferson addresses hasn't changed. And so there's nothing that has changed that warrants departing from Jefferson and its analysis of Article 66. Only when Article 56B is read to implicate things that it doesn't speak to and need not be read to speak to does this become an issue.
Well, counsel for the government says one thing has changed, which is the convening authority's approval power has been limited. And it is true that Jefferson referenced the convening authority's ability not to follow 118 as one of the reasons why the CCA didn't have to follow 118.
So, Judge Maggs, the power of a court of criminal appeals has never been dependent on the power of a convening authority. We cite in our brief.
I understand, but the Jefferson case did make that part of the reasoning.
I think that the court was analogizing. Part of the question is what really are the judges on the court doing? And when they do sentence appropriateness, they're stepping into the shoes of the sentencing authority and reconsidering the entire case as if they were adjudging the sentence anew. Just like a convening authority would do in his post-trial matters, he would step into the case. And there's a whole line of case law about what is the record for the purpose of sentence appropriateness review versus the purpose of reviewing the findings. This court doesn't need to go there because Article 56B does not speak of, does not touch, does not affect Article 66.
Well, I'm not one for policy arguments, but I mean, if you think about it, you can see them saying we're going to take this power away from the convening authority, which is one person with no legal experience and not necessarily a gamut of similar cases upon which to make a determination, and not take it away from the CCAs, which are peopled or populated, one would expect, with judges that have a lot of experience with these cases.
We think that's an important policy distinction. Judge Ryan, there's also the fact that...
I mean, they didn't change it, but I'm just trying to think, is there a rational reason why they didn't change it?
There are any number of rational reasons. We think this was a compromise. This was a last-minute piece of legislation. The language that the Court of Criminal Appeals seized on, and, you know, I do note that we all briefed this case to the Court of Criminal Appeals as if the court had the power to reassess the sentence. I argued the case before the court. The issue never came up. It wasn't specified. We didn't brief it. They made their decision. As we stepped into this case, everybody felt that the court had the power to do this. When Congress amended Article 56B, we think they were addressing a very specific issue, which was the environment at that time with the General Franklin and all of that stuff. There are many ways to distinguish a court of criminal appeals from a convening authority in terms of how they act and why they act and the influences they're subject to and the possibility that their action is error. That's why one doesn't affect the other. I would like to very briefly, before my time expires, quickly address the relief that we request. The CCA's interpretation of Article 56 is wrong. Based upon that and all of the other errors in this case, including the specified issue before this court, Sergeant Kelly respectfully requests that you reverse the CCA's decision in its entirety and remand for a complete and proper Article 66 review. Absent any other questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Court thanks counsel for both sides. Case is now submitted. Court stands in recess pending further order of the court.
All rise. Court stands in recess pending further order of the court.